I be free. Oh no, white people, no need to be afraid. We're just escaping the mess that you made. We'll never play as dirty as you play. We love our countries if you just let us be. Oh la la la. So super white man, what about the black man? What about the brown man? What about the red man? What about the yellow man? What about the woman? What about me? Oh super white man, salamu alaikum. How does it feel to solve your problems and create?
Yeah. Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. You just heard Lila Gilday with Rolling Thunder. What a powerful song that is. Before that, you heard Jawan Safadi with Super White Man. Also, extremely poignant. I'm Leslie, and I've been talking about national myths and Canada, and specifically focusing on how the narrative of Canada being open and tolerant and human rights oriented does not always seem to appear on the international stage. And I was just talking about Canada's involvement in the mining and land exploitation of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And at this point, you know, this is totally old news if you've been listening to Typically Tuesdays, but the ways in which Canada has refused to, time and time again, to condemn Israel of apartheid, to condemn the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Gaza, right? The ways in which Canada refuses to actually pull out of the ethnic cleansing of Palestinians in Gaza by continuing to trade arms with Israel and to not put sanctions on Israel, despite the many and growing demands put onto the government. The ways in which Canada has denounced even nonviolent ways of protest against apartheid and settler colonialism of Palestine, right? The ways in which Canada has delegitimized the boycott, divestment, sanction movement. So these things that I've mentioned, right? Participating in wars and literally torturing people. Land exploitation that lasts literally decades. Refusing to acknowledge apartheid and in fact participating in what is very widely spoken of as genocide and ethnic cleansing. These things in part are paid for by our taxes. So now I'm going to go back to that pinkwashing example, right? Because I think it ties everything that I've been saying pretty well together, which is, you know, truly how pervasive these national myths about Canada are, even to the most, like, quote-unquote, progressive and radical self-identified leftist Canadians. So I'm going to take you back to spring 2023. The US and the UK were trying to push out anti-trans bill after anti-trans bill. Like, it was a particularly, like, jarring and scary time for a lot of trans people, I think, because this was the beginning of, this was the peak of the beginning, maybe, of like, trans legislation, like, anti-trans legislation really coming out. And so there was a member of Parliament of Canada who created an e-petition and was urging the government to create a bill that would allow for queer and trans Americans and UK people, I don't know what they're called, to find safe passage ways to Canada through, like, basically a refugee program, because one, Canada was very LGBTQ plus tolerant and a leader of LGBTQ plus rights, and also Canada was very tolerant of refugees and a leader of refugee programs and rights. This bill went viral, and people ate that up. Canadians loved it. I know, because at the time I was not only on Instagram but also on Twitter, and both sites, Canadians were frothing over it, sharing it, reposting it through all of their channels, urging even their American friends to get involved in it. I don't know how they'd be able to, because it was a member, it was one of those like e-petitions from the parliament, but you know, they were really encouraging it. And there were only a few of us who could see through that bill, because it was misguided and misleading. Here are the facts, right? Canada has had programs for LGBTQ plus refugees since the 1990s, and that bill seemed to try to suggest that Canada would make a new one specifically for Americans and UK people. The other things about it were that Canada is not exactly the most tolerant place for trans people either, and we are seeing it right now. Spring 2023, there may not have been a lot of legislation, like anti-trans legislation, happening in Canada yet, but things were starting to become dangerous because there was a lot of anti-trans backlash outside of our legislative assemblies, and outside of Parliament. People did not want trans folks to exist. And I think the biggest misconception that the bill tried to peddle was this idea that Canada was a leader in refugee rights and advocacy and programming. Without, again, without explaining too much about my personal life, just know, I've seen how refugees are and are not able to navigate through Canada well. Canada does not treat refugees very well. And in fact, just during that period, when that e-petition went viral, Canada pulled out of the Safe Third Country Agreement, which made it all the more difficult for refugees to enter Canada through pathways that weren't just being government assisted or privately sponsored. That same year, there was basically scandal after scandal about how poorly Canada was actually showing up for migrants and refugees. UN reports came out that migrant workers were subjected to slave-like work conditions. In Toronto, the question of housing refugees became an issue that was played like a ball in a sports game, being passed from provincial government to municipal government, from provincial government to municipal government again. And housing for refugees became all the more precarious for newly arrived refugees. Later on in the year, the government announced that it would be cutting its student visa programs quite significantly. And it wasn't the fault of these students who were being duped by illegitimate institutions and who were unable to find proper accommodations in Canada. But it was actually, it is still the fault of the government to not be able to actually accommodate and treat international students in the way that they deserve to be treated. And questions about why immigrants are in Canada in the first place continue with how the government tries to essentially blame immigrants for the housing crisis. What I'm saying here today is that these national myths, they are more complex and pervasive than we give them credit to, right? We can say that, of course, Canada is built on actually settler colonialism and white supremacy and brutal cruelty towards Indigenous peoples and all that. And we can say at the same time as well, this country continues to be excessively and unnecessarily cruel to its original peoples, and to be also actually quite intolerant of newcomers and unaccommodating to the struggles of newcomers as well. But I think it's that latter part, right, that a lot of people are actually missing in their critical understanding of Canada. For me, that is also one of the reasons why I don't celebrate Canada Day, because I'm not only concerned with what's happening in the borders of this so-called country, I'm also concerned about its reach and where it goes and how it impacts other people. How does that impact make it so that the conditions of the people of other lands, the living conditions there, are so unbearable that they have to come here, right? And then when they get here, how are they treated? One of the things that I'm really reminded of actually is just how racist Canada's immigration policies are, right? When Russia invaded Ukraine in 2022, Canada pretty much immediately created a refuge program called Canada-Ukraine Authorization for Emergency Travel. And I think that has been a really important a program for many people. And at the exact same time, it has been totally snail-paced for Canada to create a program of the same impact and caliber for those who have been displaced in Sudan by the recent war, which has been over a year. It's been over a year since the Sudan war has started. And also, Canada's not allowing as many Sudanese to come to come here. I believe they're cutting it off at 3,000 people only, but it has been way more than that for Ukrainian migrants. And of course, I don't even think we really need to talk about the really racist ways in which Canada has kind of shaped the visa program for Palestinians who are trying to flee the assault on Gaza. And to my knowledge, there hasn't even been a single person who has gotten to Canada yet from Gaza, and only 1,000 people are allowed to come. Additionally, with the program for Palestinian evacuees, there's supposed to also be a really vigorous and invasive process in which the Canadian government tries to determine whether or not a migrant is affiliated with Hamas. And of course, if you look it up, we've also heard, you know, the Minister of Immigration, Refugee, Citizenship, Canada make remarkably racist comments about Palestinians. So there is also that. You may have heard of this analogy before, right? That the U.S. is a melting pot and Canada is a mosaic. And the idea of that is supposed to be, of course, that in the U.S., like, newcomers really have to, like, assimilate in order to become a part of American society, whereas in Canada, folks are able to retain a lot of their cultural practices and identity. And the diversity of that, the multiculturalism, is what allows for Canada to create its image, this mosaic, right? But in that same analogy, I think there's something that's missing, which is the encouragement for people to look closer at the image that has been created, to look deeper and more intimately at all of the images that make the mosaic. Learn about how they got here, why they are here, right? Learn about them as people, what it is like to be an immigrant or a refugee. I think that one of the big, I don't know, tendencies of Canadians, unfortunately, is that they don't talk to first generation people. They don't talk to the people who had to make all of the sacrifices and scary struggles of coming to Canada. When you talk to a person who immigrated to Canada, you understand a lot more about this place. Really valuable and underappreciated perspectives. And here is what I know about a lot of people who live in Canada. They are either people who really value diversity and open-mindedness and tolerance. And so with that being said, like, I don't celebrate Canada Day because I recognize that for me, I do not like seeing human rights atrocities happening around me and also, like, outside of the place that I was born, and also I don't like seeing human rights atrocities being committed around the world and the country that claims me to be a part of it to be okay with it and to legitimize that stuff. But I know I want to have a stronger understanding of this place that I was born in, and I want to be able to forge bridges of solidarity with others. And the first step, in my opinion, is to actively try to talk to people and to understand people and to read their stories and to listen to them. With that being said, we're about to wrap up the show this hour. Thank you so much for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays today on CJSF 90.1 FM. I hope I gave you a lot to think about. Exciting news from Chinatown Together. They've got an event coming up. They've got a few events coming up, actually, this week and next week as well. On July 5th at the Japanese Language School and Japanese Hall at 487 Alexander Street, in the evening from 6:30 to 8:30, they're going to be hosting a one-ton rapping event, one-ton rapping workshop with a community member from Chinatown named Auntie Cindy. Auntie Cindy is going to be teaching you how to wrap delicious wontons, and you will also be helping her take her first step in her dream business to open up a wonton stand. That event is free, and it is a mask mandatory event. Go check it out Friday, July 5th from 6:30 to 8:30 at the Japanese Language School and Japanese Hall at 487 Alexander Street. If you can't make it Friday evening and still want to support Chinatown organizations that are fighting against gentrification and helping to engage people in the festivities around Chinatown, they've got a variety show coming up the Sunday from 2 to 5 o'clock. July 7th, it's going to be held at the Sun Yat-sen Courtyard on 565 Columbia Street. You can stay up to date with their activities over on their Instagram at Chinatown Together, but it'll be a great time because they've got singers, they got drag queens, they got dancers, they've got stand-up happening all that afternoon, July 7th, which is a Sunday from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. That's over with Chinatown Together. Follow them on Instagram, Chinatown Together, to learn more about their events. And of course, speaking of events, please don't forget to participate in the 2024 Typically Tuesdays Pride Special Programming Project. I'm asking you about how you are bridging You're building bridges of solidarity with other queer and trans people and two-spirit people, and how you are building bridges of solidarity with other oppressed peoples around the world. Really want to know, especially because we have just passed the 55th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, Pride is a protest. We got to keep resisting. And I want to know how you're resisting against homo nationalism, against pinkwashing, against corporate pride, queer capitalism. Tell me all about it. You can find the link to that form over on my Instagram at Typically Tuesdays. And you will be featured on radio in August with your response. So if you want to be featured on Typically Tuesdays and you want to, you know, help me cultivate a sense of community, please head on over to the link in my biography over on Instagram at Typically Tuesdays. Thank you so much. Listen to more great CJSF programming. Check out Intravenous every Wednesday from 10 to 11, talking about all things, all genders. It's a fun show, very informative, lots of storytelling. Go check it out. My name is Leslie. This has been a long one, and thank you so much for tuning in because of how long it is. Here's one last song for you today. What's up, Matoa? Ayoka. What's up, Mutema Kondima? It's Pierre Quenders with Wynn Butler and King Britt. Liberté, égalité, sagacité. Here on Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. I'll talk to you very soon.